This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Yes, hello and welcome back to a brand new podcast here on The Racing Post. It's Mark Langdon's Bets Club, where myself, Jack Reeve, and of course, Mark Langdon guides you through the world of football from a betting perspective. Mark, already that's enough from me. Why don't you talk our lovely listeners through exactly what they can expect from these weekly episodes?
Yeah, I think it's a case really with the Bets Club that we want people to be involved in it. You know, we want a community feel. We want to hear from the listeners. We want to discuss their bets that they think they fancy for the weekend. We want to, to discuss any of the big talking points that, you know, that they think need answering. And as well as that, we'll also have anti-post angles from myself. We'll talk about the biggest gains. We'll have my sort of best bet for the weekend. We'll have a Langdon long shot each week where we'll try to pick out an outsider, a treble for those who like their ackers. We'll go to the player prop shop and look at some of those players to be carded, shots on target, that type of thing, because, you know, it's becoming increasingly popular. We'll also have, I suppose, some of my friends from the world of betting also getting involved, so, you know, bringing along their expertise. And, you know, this week already we've got Dan Charles from the Racing Post, absolute EFL expert. He's going to come on and deliver his three best EFL bets for the week. We'll have Twitter polls as well to get through, and of course the listeners' questions.
And I think the lovely opportunity with this, Mark, is, of course, you were tipping very regularly in the Racing Post. And now that your role has changed slightly with the company, people, readers and listeners and watchers maybe aren't seeing as much as that. So this is a nice insight into, one, how you approach your weekend betting, and two, your tips again.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think strategy was something I didn't mention there. But, you know, if anybody has any questions on, what you look for in a bet, or, you know, how you price up football matches, then, you know, I'm sure that's something we can get to, because I just love betting on football, you know, and I don't think should be ashamed to say that. You know, we do it responsibly, but, you know, the football sort of weekend is dominated really by the bets that I've had.
Absolutely. Let's jump straight into things then, and let's have a look at the anti-post angles. Of course, the Premier League is well underway. It's already been an exciting start. I'm sure many of you listening along would have read the big kickoff. Let's start with the Premier League outright market. What are you thinking here?
Oh, I'm thinking that it has changed quite a lot, really, when you think that Lukaku's gone to Chelsea, Cristiano Ronaldo has gone to Manchester United, and Harry Kane didn't go to Manchester City. I think it's left a fascinating sort of four-way fight for the title, if you like. But I actually think the best bet, Jack, is the Man City-Chelsea dual forecast at around 2-1. So those two teams to finish first and second in any order. Chelsea, absolutely defensive masterclass since Thomas Tuchel came to the club. They've played 29 matches in the Premier League or Champions League, and only three times in those 29 matches have they conceded an expected goal figure above one. I think that's extraordinary, but then you can dig in even deeper. Two of those three occasions, they had a first half red card. So in the other 20 sort of six matches, only once have they conceded more than one XG. And that was away to Manchester City when Aguero did that Panenka penalty, and Chelsea actually won the game as well. So I think adding Saul to the midfield, and particularly Lukaku to the attack, you know, with the defence that they've already got, makes them massive runners. But they have got to still get past Manchester City, who in the 5 years under Pep Guardiola have averaged 88.6 points in the Premier League. So even if they have a bad year, you're probably going to have to get sort of 90 to get close to winning the league. And I still think that City are better than they were last season, even without Harry Kane. I'll tell you for why, because Sergio Aguero didn't play that much. And I think Jack Grealish, already look at the stats with his ability to sort of progressions into the penalty box. He's right up there, you know, one of the best around. They don't need a centre forward. It's nice to have one, but I don't think they absolutely need one. And that's why I'd go for them too. What about you? Have you got a fancy in sort of out of those four teams?
Well, I think I've gone for Chelsea with my personal betting. You mentioned it there, that defensive stability just seems so key to me. And I think the added addition of Lukaku, I'm looking at the prices. And if I'm having a season long bet, there's a lot of patience involved. I want something slightly juicier. I looked at Manchester City not being able to get hold of Harry Kane, and you spoke about it there, Mark, not necessarily needing him. And I know full well I've watched Manchester City thrash my team, Norwich, already. They've steamrolled their way past Arsenal. It's clear that they don't need that out-and-out striker. I'm just looking at Chelsea and I'm thinking there's progression there. And if you're getting progression on a side that have already won the Champions League, you've got to be in a good place, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're ruling out Liverpool and Manchester United for now. Come back.
Which feels unwise.
Give it a couple of weeks and we may well be jumping on the Ronaldo bandwagon. You mentioned there about your love of Norwich City. I wanted to know if you were in Farker heaven or Farker hell, really, in terms of the start, and obviously been slashed for Premier League relegation after losing the first three matches. Do you still have sort of hope and faith that Norwich will stay up, Jack?
I think it's a really difficult conversation, this, because it's frustrating as a Norwich City fan. We've come up this time, and the argument after winning the championship in 2018-19 was the fact that we didn't give it a go. Now, we're talking about that in the context of spending money, and I've got a real dislike of the kind of Premier League punditry where everything is made out, where if you don't spend, you're not going to succeed. And I think there's often outliers from that argument. But I understand that the last time we came up, we spent £350,000 on Sam Byram, and that was it. This time, though, we've spent north of £50 million. We've brought in some well-known players, the likes of Christos Jolis and Josh Sargent, who have been talked about as some of the best youth young players in the world. And yet still, we're really struggling. And I just think that the gap between the Championship and the Premier League seems to grow. I think this weekend against Arsenal will be a really interesting test, because Arsenal, of course, really low on confidence. So that presents an opportunity. The first five games for Norwich have been incredibly difficult. We've already gone up against Liverpool and Manchester City, Leicester included in that. Norwich's season starts against Watford in a couple of weeks' time. And I think then you can really start to judge where Norwich are at. I know a lot of people have already backed us to go down. Newcastle look an interesting proposition at about 6-4, though, Mark, for relegation.
Yeah, they would be my selection for sure. I mean, they were bottom five on expected goals last season. The only real signing for the first team is Joe Willock. And he, of course, was there last season. It was just, he scored those 7-7 at the end. But it isn't really an improvement, because, like I say, he was already there on loan. And so I don't see them having moved forward. And I think that the three teams that arrived in the Premier League from the Championship are better than the usual standard. I totally agree. I think Norwich have been written off too early. Ordinarily, they would have lost the three games that they've already played. The fact that they've played them right at the start kind of gives people added reason to think that it will just be more of the same. I think that's really unfair. Brentford have shown that they are, ultra competitive already. And Watford as well, got plenty of pace on the counter-attack with Dennis and Ismaïla Sarr on the wings. I think that's something to watch out for from them. So I think at least one kind of established Premier League team, if you like, will be in big trouble. And it could well be Burnley, but, Sean Dyche is probably better suited to this sort of battle than what I would say Steve Bruce is. The takeover could happen and all of a sudden Newcastle are a different proposition. As it goes now, I think 6-4 for them to be relegated is just too big. I respect some of their attacking players, but if one of them gets injured, if one of that front sort of three gets injured, then they're in absolutely massive trouble.
And here's one for you, Mark. In terms of teams that, can expect to be towards the bottom of the table, the likes of Norwich, Brentford, etc. In terms of Norwich's opening fixtures, Liverpool, Manchester City, Leicester, you've got 50% of people saying they'd rather get them games out of the way because you're not expected to win them anyway. And you've got 50% of the other people saying, well, it's terrible momentum to start the season with. And once you start losing games, incredibly difficult to break that cycle. What do you make of that?
I think that people just go results bias on what happens afterwards. I don't think there's any, you know, if Norwich go well, then in sort of future weeks, then people say, oh, it's great to get those games out of the way. If they go badly, then people will again go, oh, it's because of the bad start. I don't think it matters. You know, you play everybody twice. And I'm sure as professionals, you know, Daniel Farke will know which games to target and which ones that are kind of gone anyway. I don't think that the confidence should be damaged too much. And similarly, I don't think Brentford will be absolutely sky high because they've made a good start. Brentford start's been really easy. If you think about the fact that Arsenal are really easy, is a bit of a maybe an exaggeration. I'll check that and go for comfortable because I don't want to upset any Brentford fans, Jack. But, you know, Arsenal on the opening night was absolutely perfect. You know, they were missing a lot of players. I don't think Aston Villa have played very well so far this season. And, you know, Crystal Palace are still putting a team together as well. So, you know, I think people just read too much into a couple of early results. You know, it's a 38 game season and what happens in week one and two doesn't define you.
Now, the Premier League golden boot market looks absolutely brilliant. Romelu Lukaku's the favourite. You've got Cristiano Ronaldo, I'm sure we'll be speaking about a lot through this episode. The second favourite, Mohamed Salah and Harry Kane next up. Mark, I mean, first of all, my initial look at this market, Ronaldo looks far too short. Be interested to hear your thoughts on that shortly. Harry Kane is fourth in the market. I thought he would have been a slightly higher up. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, you may well have nicked my tip there, Jack, because I think Harry Kane at sort of 7-1 is definitely the each way play. I mean, he's a 3-time Premier League Golden Boot winner. He's somebody that is almost guaranteed to start any match that he wants to for Tottenham, given his sort of standing at the club. He takes penalties. You know, the team will be set up to service Harry Kane. Hasn't scored in the Premier League yet, but he missed a one-on-one against Wolves, nearly had a tap-in against Watford. You know, the goals will come. He's already sort of opened his account in the Conference League and for England. So I think Harry Kane is the value of those four. I would say I massively respect Lukaku. The one question I would have against him is we don't know if he'll be on penalties yet. I know that Jorginho used to be considered a master and has since missed a couple for Italy. But I think if you're backing sort of the Premier League Golden Boot favourite, you'd want to know that they're on penalties. We know that Mohamed Salah is on, you know, is on spot kick duty for Liverpool. He has got to go to the AFCON. That could only be a couple of matches in the new year. But again, I think it's a slight negative for him. Cristiano Ronaldo, he's 36. Yeah, that is already, I mean, he's not like an ordinary 36-year-old. I mean, when he took his top off the other day, it was more like 26, wasn't it, rather than 36 that in terms of his body. He looks after himself. But I do wonder whether he might be saved for Champions League matches or at the other end of it, on the back of a Champions League game. Is he going to be able to go Premier League, then Champions League, then Premier League, then Champions League? That would concern me again if you're backing him, you know, at relatively short prices. Whereas, you know, Harry Kane's not getting rotated out of the team because Tottenham haven't even got another striker. You know, Manchester United have got Edinson Cavani as the backup, or maybe Greenwood or Rashford or Martial. So, I think those are the question marks against Ronaldo. Lukaku doesn't have that same type of competition, but I don't expect Tuchel to be rotating him too much. But again, it's just a penalty factor. The one I like at a big price doesn't seem to be getting any mentions at the moment, but it's Ferran Torres.
Goes under the radar a little bit, doesn't it?
He does. 25-1, already been scoring for Manchester City this season. Pep Guardiola has referred to him as a striker. And we know that Gabriel Jesus has asked to play out wide because Guardiola referenced that in a recent interview. That at times, maybe De Bruyne will play up there, Foden can play up there, so can Raheem Sterling. But I think that Ferran Torres actually has the movement of a forward. It's just that he hasn't played there that often yet for City. He's done a little bit of it for Spain. But if he does end up being Man City's starting sort of striker for most of the season, 25-1 about a team that's going to score that amount of goals looks to me to be a big runner. So maybe Kane of the big four and then Ferran Torres sort of next best.
Right, it's time for our match of the day. Let's look at the match this weekend that we're most looking forward to. And of course, it has to be Manchester United against Newcastle this weekend. With the arrival of Cristiano Ronaldo, most people will be watching. Well, I say that, it's a 3 o'clock kickoff, so it's not going to be televised. Mark, there's been so much talk this week about the fact that people living in the UK won't be able to watch Manchester United against Newcastle on television because of the 3 p.m. blackout. We haven't really spoken about the 3 p.m. blackout on podcasts before. Are you still in agreement with that rule, or do you think it's slightly archaic now?
Both. can you have both in this argument? Look, I think ultimately it is archaic, and it feels very strange that clubs can't maximize their potential and sort of show any game that they want, whether it's through like a Premier League style Netflix or each club doing their own one. But I totally get why the 3 p.m. blackout is there, because the World Cup fans of lower league teams, I think, would suffer if this Manchester United v Newcastle game or any game was live at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. I think the only way you could actually get around it is to move the Premier League game so you don't have any kicking off at 3 o'clock, and then you could show all 10 over a weekend, a bit like we did during lockdown. It's not for everybody. But, you know, when people point to the Bundesliga getting it right in terms of, you know, they have all of their high profile games 3:30 locally on a Saturday, what they don't mention is that that means that sort of the lower leagues in Bundesliga, so like Bundesliga 2, for instance, they don't play at that time on a Saturday. So you're asking the Championship, League 1, maybe League 2, to kind of change their whole calendar just so people can watch a 3 o'clock Saturday game. That's not for me. I think the lesser of two evils for me is the blackout. And I appreciate that does mean some people won't be able to find a way to watch it. But, you know, it's always been that case. You know, you don't have a right to watch every game of football.
In terms of this game, though, Mark, how are you approaching this one?
Well, I think I'm expecting a lot of goals in the game. I mean, I wouldn't be back. I mean, Ronaldo's 1-2 to score during the game. He's 2-1 for the first goal. He's only 8-1 for a hat trick. So, for the sort of Ronaldo fanboys out there, there's not going to be much juice really in any of those prices. And I think in terms of, you know, whether he's actually a good signing for Manchester United, I've got my doubts. And that's not to say that individually he won't do well, because I think he will. He did well for Juventus if you look at his goal return. But I think the output of the team can struggle working out where you put him in that side, because he doesn't do any defensive work. And he would point to the fact that, you know, if he's getting you 30 goals a season, he doesn't have to. But within a team framework, it's really difficult, you know, to hide a player like that, you know, when you are trying to defend. Or, you know, is he going to play up front on his own? It's maybe not the perfect way for him to play. You've seen it for Portugal against Ireland. He scored both the goals. Didn't really do much for the 90 minutes. And somebody like Bruno Fernandes was actually a little bit lost, because he didn't have, that kind of, I suppose, striker to stretch the opposition and create the space for him. So how that sort of Ronaldo-Fernandes dynamic works for Manchester United, I think, is a real big sort of talking point. In terms of this game, I think the best bet, Man United to win and over 3.5 goals at 13-10. Newcastle's three Premier League matches this season have had a total XG of 10.4. Steve Bruce is a lot of things at the moment, but it's not boring watching Newcastle. So Maximin, 18 carries already into the final third. So he's somebody that I think can hurt Manchester United. You saw Adama Traore do something similar a couple of weeks ago. Molineux really run at that United defence, and they didn't look particularly comfortable. But ultimately, Newcastle, I expect to be outclassed. You wouldn't be surprised if Ronaldo scored, but I wouldn't be backing him at 1-2, that's for sure.
No, complete agreement, Mark. I think the prices about Ronaldo's goal scoring prowess do seem a little bit short. Let's get into some quick fire bets. Lots of games to tackle this weekend. Let's condense them into four separate bets for you. Mark, let's start with a player prop shop.
Yeah, so this is Watford versus Wolves. Kuchka of Watford, he is aggressive. Let's put it no other way than that. He really does like to get involved. 3.5 tackles per game already since he arrived from Serie A. 2.5 fouls per game as well. he's in midfield, so he won't directly be up against Adama Traore, but you can imagine, we've seen it before with teams, that it's like a tag team effect, isn't it? They take it on rotation to foul him. And the last tick in the box for this bet, which is around about 12 to 5, Peter Banks only had one Premier League game this season, the referee, 6 yellow cards in that. He's been dishing them out in the Europa Conference League as well. So I'll go for Kuchka of Watford to be to pick up a card.
Nice start. Let's get a long shot now. Maybe a bet that people might like to back as a single if they don't fancy the shorties in an acca.
Well, my hearts and mind, or hearts and minds, is on Mainz, Jack. 13 to 5 to win at Hoffenheim. They have got a manager that you've got to keep an eye on. Bo Svensson, he's a protege of Ralf Rangnick. Ralf Rangnick is somebody in German football who's seen as the absolute master of being able to spot talent in all areas. And he is somebody that earmarks Bo Svensson from an early age as he you know, could really go on to be a top coach. And if you have a look at how they finished last season, 2 defeats in their last 15, they had 8 wins that included victories over Bayern Munich and Wolfsburg. This season, they've already beaten Leipzig as well and Greuther Fürth. So they're 13-5 to win at Hoffenheim. They won the corresponding fixture last season 2-1. It wasn't a fluke. They won the shots on target count 7-2. And like I say, around about 13-5 just looks too big. And if you take one thing out of this podcast for this week, Bo Svensson, keep an eye on him.
One to put in the tracker, that's for sure. Mainz 13-5. What about a treble, Mark?
Yeah, so I'm going to go around sort of Europe for this one. And we'll start with Bayern Munich to beat Leipzig. Leipzig have lost so many players in the summer. Both of the centre-backs, Upamecano went to Bayern. Konate went, of course, to Liverpool. Sabitzer, one of the real key midfielders, he went to Bayern as well, as did the manager, Julian Nagelsmann. So all change at Leipzig. Bayern are playing at the Red Bull Arena on Saturday. I think they'll win that game. Also on Saturday in League One, Charlton to beat Cheltenham. MK Dons missed so many chances against Cheltenham last week. It was unbelievable. I think Cheltenham should have their confidence restored after beating Crewe and Crawley. And then hopefully all of that will be riding onto the Monday night football, and that's Everton to beat Burnley. I do wonder whether Everton are getting enough credit, actually, for a really good start. I mean, you have a look at those tricky away games at Elland Road and then at the Amex against Leeds and Brighton. They've come away from that with 4 points. They beat Southampton as well. And I think this is a good opportunity for them to sort of continue picking up victories under Rafa Benitez, who certainly needs to start well to win the fans over. That treble, nearly 8-1. So it's Bayern to beat Leipzig, Charlton to beat Cheltenham, and Everton to beat Burnley.
I must admit, Mark, I always get a bit nervy if accas are rolling into the Monday, but you're obviously confident.
Absolutely. Oh, no, absolutely. It gives you the option to cash out or lay off, doesn't it? If you are feeling a little bit uneasy going into the Monday night football.
Absolutely. Let's get your most confident bet of the week, the nap.
Yeah, so it's a 4-6 shot, and it's Real Betis draw no bet away to Granada in La Liga. If we have a look at sort of Granada, they've only had 6 shots on target in their 3 games this season, which obviously isn't a great return. If you have a look at Betis, they've had 37 shots and conceded only 27. That includes a game against Real Madrid where they're unlucky to lose 1-0. They're 3rd for possession in La Liga. I think Fekir's a great player. They've just maybe not had the rub of the green so far this season, but I think they're doing enough things well. That game's on Monday. And I think Betis, don't see them losing the game. So I would like the draw no bet in my favour because they're away from home. 4-6 looks a solid one to me.
There we go then, a cards bet, a long shot, a treble and a nap. Mark mentioned briefly about Charlton against Cheltenham in the EFL. It's time to speak to our EFL expert, Dan Childs, for some more tips throughout the Football League.
Hello, Childs. It's good to speak to you. So come then, give the listeners your 3 best bets for the EFL this weekend.
Well, first of all, I'm going to look at Queen's Park Rangers away to Reading in the Championship. I just think they've had a great start to the season, really carried on where they left off at the end of last season under Mark Warburton. He's done some really good business in the transfer market and kind of complemented good players that they've already got as well. Charlie Austin's come in on a permanent deal now. That adds to what they've got up front there with Lyndon Dykes, scoring the goals there. And the midfield, they've got threats as well with Chris Willock and Ilias Chair. There's goals in the team. At the back, I think Rob Dickey is, I think he's up there as one of the best central defenders in the Championship. It's a lovely mix, really, they've got there. And as opposed to them this weekend, Reading, I just think they're having a really tough time. They had the transfer embargo in the summer. They were kind of restricted, weren't they, to free agents and loan deals. I mean, a couple of loans they have got over the line. They signed a couple of players that are sort of sunk without trace at Chelsea. Bubba Rahman and Danny Drinkwater have arrived there. And it's going to take them a while, I think, to get up to speed. And I just think, four defeats they've had in five so far. Reading, worst defensive record in the league. And the small squad as well. You've got big injuries as well, making it even worse. Lucas Zhao and Yaku Mate, who they rely on to get the goals, both long-term injuries in a really bad situation. I think QPR can take advantage.
Okay, I mean, Chelsea have managed to swap Drinkwater for Saul Niguez, which feels like they've done quite well out of that. I understand that you've got a good one in League One and in League Two, and it's a London thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, another London side we're going to go for in League One. Wimbledon away to Morecambe, I like this weekend. I think Mark Robinson has done a really good job at Wimbledon, been at the club a long, long time, got the manager's job towards the end of last season, did a great job getting them out of relegation trouble. And he's not really set any bar to their limits this season. He's saying, let's see what we can do. I think he might be eyeing up a push for the playoffs, which is amazing. When you look at the division, you look at the power and the quality of some of the clubs in there. You've got the likes of former Premier League teams like Wigan, Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth, Ipswich, Bolton and Charlton. It's an incredibly strong League One this year. But Wimbledon are doing well. They've played at a tough start on the fixture list, but they've only had one defeat. Saw a lot of their highlights of their game where they beat Oxford 3-1 in the last weekend. They looked great in that game. A lot of good young players playing well for them. People that have come through the academy like Jack Radoni, the goalkeeper Nick Zanev, Oyu Basal, Will Nightingale, Anthony Hartinger. And that's five players there, all playing regularly, all come through the academy. And they look a good side to me, as opposed to that Morecambe. They're another, a smaller club, if you like, in League One, but and have started quite well. Got 7 points from five games, but I do worry about them keeping it going. They sold their captain, Sam Lavelle, to Charlton on deadline day, which I think is a massive blow to them. It'll be interesting to see how they go from here on in, and I think Wimbledon will take advantage there.
And then Orient, are your last ones. You see them as sort of bankers.
Orient's my last one. I think Kenny Jackett for Orient, playing at home to Oldham they are this weekend. I think Kenny Jackett was a great appointment for them this summer. I mean, he's normally operated, as managing in either the Championship or in League One. He's dropped into League Two, and I just think he's a very good, vastly experienced manager. He's been given the budget to bring in the players he needs at Orient. Harry Smith, he's brought in, the centre forward from Northampton. I really rate him. He's fantastic in the air. He's got started the season really well with four goals in five appearances. He complements a little bit else of what they've got up front. Raul Soteria is a player that I've kind of caught the eye for me coming through Orient the last couple of years. He's at Cypriot under 21 international. He scored a fantastic goal in their recent home win against Bradford, where they won 2-0 against a team that's right up there going well. Aaron Drinan, he brought in from Ipswich, another attacking player. He made 22 appearances in League One last season, a promising young player. So I really like the blend there. And they're against an Oldham team, I think, are going to struggle to stay up in League Two this season. All sorts going on and off the pitch there. The last game, the last weekend at home, the Barrow, they lost 3-0. There was fans coming on the pitch, sitting in the centre circle to protest. Took a while for the game to get restarted. Keith Curl there has got big problems, I think, in trying to keep them up. So don't think it's going to improve for them this weekend. Orient to win that one for me.
Okay, well, thanks, Dan. And just a reminder there, he's free bets in the EFL. It's QPR. Also got AFC Wimbledon and Leighton Orient. So very much hoping that the trio of teams can hand out some capital punishment this weekend.
Now, as Mark mentioned at the top of the show, this podcast is all about you guys as well. We want to hear your thoughts and feelings going into the weekend's action. And we tweeted out on the Racing Post Sport Twitter page, which of the following were the most likely to let down a treble this weekend. We had Arsenal at 8-15 who play Norwich City, Manchester City at 8-15 who go up against Leicester, and Liverpool at 8-11 against Leeds. The other option, of course, was the treble wins, and none of the teams let them down. We had over 300 votes, thanks to everyone for getting involved. And Mark, the most popular response was Arsenal. People think Arsenal are not going to get past Norwich City. 17% of the vote thinks that the treble wins. So that was Arsenal, Manchester City and Liverpool. If you were to have a vote, which one would you go for?
I did have a vote and I actually went for the treble wins.
Oh. Well, you constructed the poll.
No, I thought it was really interesting to, because the two of them, obviously very similar prices. And then you look at Liverpool, it's a tricky game, Elland Road. But I don't think Leeds have started the season quite as well as maybe I thought that they would. And that's why I thought it was a decent opportunity for Liverpool to win that game. Manchester City, I think they'll win at Leicester. Leicester have picked up, some good points in terms of beating Wolves and Norwich. But I don't think they were very good in either of those games. Right. And they were dreadful, even with 11 men against West Ham. I think that Fofana's injury is a big one for them and that they didn't actually replace him, Jack.
Yeah, just quickly on Leicester. Going forwards, they look threatening as always. I mean, they've got some wonderful talent, haven't they? I agree with you, though, defensively, all over the shop. And I just look at that Manchester City side going forwards. They are not going to be able to make the same mistakes that they did in their last game against Norwich City, against Manchester City, because they will get punished. So, yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you there. The other one, Arsenal-Norwich. People think nearly half of the 320 votes think that Arsenal will let that treble down. Are you in agreement?
Well, I obviously voted for the treble to win. If I was to have picked one of the teams, I would have picked Arsenal. And it's purely from a confidence point of view in that what happens if Norwich score first in this game at the Emirates? Can you imagine what the Emirates is going to be like if it's, say, 0-0 after 25 minutes, Norwich get a corner, bang, 1-0 down? That then becomes a really difficult place for, home advantage. Is it even an advantage anymore? Because, ordinarily you would expect, a kind of big six team, if you like, big seven team, I suppose, we've got now. Even if they concede first against Norwich, as long as there's sort of half an hour to a sort of 45 minutes left, you'd still fancy them to be able to come back, because we've sort of seen sort of big teams do that time and time again. You can't win every match to nil. Occasionally you do concede first, but the whole club just doesn't feel in a good spot at the moment at Arsenal. I've got a little bit of sympathy for them from a professional point of view. Obviously, as a Spurs fan, I'm absolutely loving it. But from a professional point of view, two of their games were really hard. Chelsea, missing players in that game. And then against Man City away, and they were down to 10 men. And they actually played quite well for about 5 minutes in that game at the start. So I expect them to get better as the season goes on. They've had COVID issues. They've had injury issues. I still think player for player, they're quite a bit better than Norwich. But it's just that it's the confidence factor, and that's probably why they've topped the poll of the team that's most likely to flop as favourites this weekend.
And do you think with the amount of money that they spent in the summer, I mean, there was 80 million combined on Ben White and Aaron Ramsdale. I mean, for an already struggling Mikel Arteta, that surely adds pressure, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. They're your biggest net spenders in the whole of the league. I actually, Edu went on Sky Sports last week and I thought he spoke really well. It doesn't change the fact that at some stage they need to start winning, because, they are a team that expects to be, at least fighting for European football, even if the Champions League is a sort of, it feels like a distant memory now, doesn't it, when they used to qualify every year. But I felt he spoke well about, his job is to look after the long term. And if you have a look at those signings, as long as they work out and turn out to be good players, then Arsenal are maybe sort of set for the next 5 or 6 years in some really key positions. And, nobody will be talking about 50 million for Ben White if he sort of gets into the England team and starts playing, at the level that we know that he did for Brighton. So I can understand why they've done what they've done. I'm still not entirely sure the recruitment process is spot on, but at least they've got a plan in place. I just have my doubts as to whether Arteta is the person to carry it through. And, you know, if they don't beat Norwich, it's going to be really difficult for them to continue to talk about the long term without addressing the short term.
Well, this is the thing. It's the constant battle that football clubs face, isn't it, between planning for the future and setting yourself up to operate in a sustainable financial model and also bringing the short term results. I mean, Arsenal are a huge club who've tasted such success, and now they're talking about, you know, planning for the long term whilst going three games without even scoring a goal. So really difficult times for Arsenal. We really appreciate everyone who voted on that poll, though, and we'll be continuing to run them throughout the weeks. It's worth following Racing Post Sport and Mark on Twitter so you never miss out and you can have your say. We've also been able to get some questions in from our lovely listeners as well. And let's start with Lucas, who asks, Mark, the Serie A market suggests it's the most open for years. Who do you fancy? Should Inter be favs? And is it a huge drift on Juve, an overreaction? It's worth having a quick look at the market. Juve are favs at 2-1, Inter 23-10, Atalanta 6-1, Roma 9-1, Napoli 11s, Milan 12s, Lazio 28, and it's 250-1. Bar, Mark, it's incredibly tight. Who will you be tipping?
I like Atalanta at 6-1. If you sort of go on sort of, you know, the metrics, they really weren't far away and haven't been far away for the last couple of years. You know, they now are sort of becoming Champions League regulars. I think if you have a look at, you know, Juventus have got a new coach, albeit a returning one, but in Allegri, it's still, you know, a new coach. Inter have got a new coach. Roma have got a new coach, Mr. Mourinho. Napoli have got a new coach, and so have Lazio. So most of the teams at the top of that betting have had some, you know, some real big change over the summer. Atalanta and Gasperini have got the perfect manager for the club. They lost Romero. You know, he was a big departure to Tottenham, but the fact that they were able to get him in the first place and buy him and then sell him for about a 25 million euro profit in one season tells you everything about the way that they recruit players and then do sell them on. It's their model and it works. And so I think in terms of sort of who I would go for, I would go for Atalanta. Should Inter be favs? I think it's quite close between them and Juventus. I'd say the drift on Juve probably is an overreaction. They haven't started the season well. They were beaten by Empoli. They've lost Cristiano Ronaldo. I expect them to get better as the season goes on.
Great stuff. Ted asks, Mark, any strong fancies for Qatar 2022 after this round of internationals? Now, I know we've still got a few games to go at time of recording, but who's caught your eye?
It's the boys that gave me a great run at the Euros, ultimately sort of broke my heart when that extra time defeat against England in the semi-finals. But Denmark are 50-1.
You like them, don't you?
Well, I mean, I think they showed at the Euros, you know, without Christian Eriksen. And people then sort of said, oh, well, you know, he's sort of what happened to him inspired the team. I mean, it also made them quite a bit worse in terms of talent on the pitch. You know, he was by far their best player going into the tournament. Who knows if he'll be back by Qatar? We've got no idea whether he'll ever be able to play again. I certainly hope so. But they showed even without him that they are a team that's getting better. It's not an old team. Christensen, the performance he put in at Anfield for Chelsea the other week, I mean, he is growing into, you know, an elite defender. And then somebody like Damsgaard, who scored that free kick against England, he's somebody that I think in, you know, what is it, another, what, 15 months away, he's somebody that should be up to that level where you're going, wow, you know, he's a top player. Jonas Vind was the forward that started the Euros. Again, he's young, got potential to improve. I just think that we saw at the Euros that they're a, you know, a really solid side. And, you know, at 50-1, they're going to, I can see them giving you a really good run for your money.
So come on then, let's go back in time slightly. Denmark against England in the Euros. You were, of course, really sweet on Denmark in the lead up. You tipped it in the paper and on YouTube as well. Who were you supporting in that game?
I had a half and half scarf, effectively. I was smiling when Denmark scored. I sort of had a little secret smile to myself. I thought, that's not bad. When England then equalised, you know, I was happy. When they scored the penalty, maybe more so because it was Harry Kane, and, you know, he missed it initially. And, you know, we've seen some of the stick that the other England players got for missing their penalties in the final. I didn't want that to fall on Kane's shoulders. So, I think because England lost the final, and I can speak retrospectively, I probably would have preferred it if Denmark would have won and then at least got the each way money. But it was one of those where I think you do get swept up with the, you know, just in the hype of the nation. So I probably just about wanted England to win, probably more than Denmark. It wasn't much in it.
Do any outcomes of sporting events, whether it be football or something else, come to mind where you've landed a winning bet, but the actual outcome of the result has made you sad?
Well, there's a really good one from the Champions League final, because I tipped, I tipped Liverpool to beat Spurs in the, I tipped Liverpool to win the Champions League the year that they won it. And of course, you know, as a Tottenham fan, it was the biggest game in probably our history. I was in Madrid, and I wanted, I wanted Tottenham to win. At that moment, I didn't care about the professional pride nor the sort of financial money that was coming my way. So it was a winning tip that I was absolutely gutted about. But then sort of on the way home, I didn't get home until, I can't remember, it was the Monday or the Tuesday. But on the way home, I was like, well, you know, at least that there was a silver lining. So it's not too often where you're cheering against your bets, but that was certainly one of those occasions.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who I sit around at Carrow Road who often bet on the opposition just in case that Norwich don't win. They've at least got something to cheer them up on the way home. Let's have a look then. We've got another question coming in that says, is the future of the Championship going to replicate the top of the Premier League with the same two clubs competing for promotion every 2 years? It'd be really interesting to get Dan Child's thoughts on this, actually, in maybe a future episode. I guess I'm probably most maybe not qualified, but I've watched a lot of Championship football because the team I support have been competing in that division, I guess, off and on for the past decade, and it's certainly going that way, and I think it is in most divisions, because when you go back down from the Premier League into the Championship, you of course have a whole load of cash at your disposal. Now sometimes that goes very wrong because clubs come back into the Championship with players on sizable contracts, and often players don't really want to be playing in the Championship. If they've gone from the glitz and glamour of the Premier League into the Championship, it's incredibly grueling. It's not very glamorous. That can backfire. But if you're a team like Norwich, and there's other clubs who kind of operate in a similar model now, I think you can add Brentford to that list, who recruit really wisely. They're recruiting young, hungry players who just want to prove themselves. No matter what division it is, it can work in your favour. And I mean, you look at the last few years, Mark, and it has often been the same few clubs going in between the divisions. And when you're going up against clubs like Rotherham or Burton in recent times, where financially you're just not going to be able to compete, unfortunately you do have that mismatch. And it's similar when a Manchester City goes up against a Brentford, where you've got, you know, a club whose players are worth over £1 billion against a club where their most valuable player is 10 to 20 million. So I think, I'm not sure what the fix is, because I think parachute payments are a good idea, and it means that financially clubs aren't going to go out of existence when you come down with big contracts. But it's not where we want to be, really, is it?
No, and I think that question came in from Boinging All Over, which suggests he's probably a West Brom fan. I mean, West Brom and Fulham already look like they're miles better than the rest in the Championship. It's only early days, but hopefully it doesn't, because I think everybody loves the competition, the competitive nature of the Championship. And we've had one in from Silver Fox Zone, who says that he often finds better value to be had outside the Premier League in the EFL, and whether we had any tips for him on the outright or this weekend. Now, obviously, Dan Charles has already sort of gone through the weekend stuff. What I would say is I just like MK Dons for promotion at 8-1 in League One. Jack, it's a really hot league. Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Pompey, Rotherham, Wigan, Oxford, Ipswich, Wickham, Charlton. You know, they all fancy their chances of going up. But what I like about MK Dons is that I think Russell Martin has departed for Swansea. Liam Manning has come in and actually hasn't changed that much. Similar style of football, so seems absolutely perfect. They've had a really difficult start in the fact they've already played Charlton, Ipswich, Sunderland, and Accrington as well, who are flying high at the moment. So it's been a difficult start. They've started reasonably well. And then you have a look at sort of some of the other metrics. They're top for possession. They're in the top four for shots and shots on target. So they're doing a lot of things well. Moisa and Troy Parrott are, a decent front two. They've got other forward options as well. So for Silver Fox Own, if he's looking for an anti-post one, MK Dons 8-1 for promotion in League One.
Yeah, it'd be nice for MK Dons and their fans if they were to achieve that feat, Mark, because I think they felt slightly let down by Russell Martin, who I think they felt were in it for the long term and was creating a project, and then left for Swansea, who don't really have much going in their way at the moment, do they? They've sold their best players. They're struggling slightly in the Championship. So best of luck to MK Dons this season. And Mark, I spend day in, day out with you, working alongside you. Yeah, I rarely get to ask you questions surrounding football. So here's one from me. Who do you think will win the Champions League this year?
I like the obvious teams. You know, Paris Saint-Germain, Man City, Chelsea are all right up there. But I actually think Liverpool at 10-1, it's a tricky group with Milan, Porto and Atletico. But in a one-off game, I think Jurgen Klopp is a master at getting a team up for matches. They, of course, haven't got the injuries that just ravaged them last season. And I think the Anfield factor, having fans back, is big for them in European football. And I don't fancy them for the Premier League because I just think they'll pick up too many injuries and the squad's small. But, you know, if they're able to go into these sort of knockout games in sort of February onwards with their best 11 on the pitch, I think that they'll be right in with a good chance. And I think the Premier League's the best league in Europe by a good margin at the moment. Not a lot of people like to do this, but I'm actually going to have a second bet on another team that's in Liverpool's group, which is Atletico at 25-1. You know, they are not in terms of winning it, but sort of in terms of course and distance and going far. Diego Simeone is better than most at getting them through to the latter stages. They've got what you need really at sort of knockout football, good defence, solid midfield, and then a little bit of quality up front. That's where I think they were lacking last season. Luis Suarez, he's past his best and he struggled a little bit in the Champions League. Antoine Griezmann is not past his best. So the re-signing of Griezmann gives Atletico probably a better chance than they had last season, much like the fact they're in with Liverpool, Milan and Porto. It's a tough group. Hopefully they can both get through and we'll have a couple of good runners in the knockout stages.
There we go. That answers my question. Thanks very much, Mark. And that brings the first episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club to an end. It's been an absolute pleasure. As we said throughout the show, please do get involved. You can follow us on Twitter at Racing Post Sport. You can follow Mark on Twitter as well. You'll find him easy enough. And you can follow me at Jack Reeve TNC. We'll be back next week for another episode. Please do remember to subscribe to this feed on whatever podcast app you listen to. It's not going on the usual Racing Post feed where you pick up the Racing Post podcast. So please do remember, tell your friends if you're a new listener or used to listen to the Football Postcast as well. A big thank you to Mark Langdon, as always. If you're following in any of Mark or Dan's or anyone's tips this week, please do remember to gamble responsibly and within your means. And until then, stay safe. Bye-bye.